Hi there and welcome to New Books in South Asian Studies. I'm your host Ian Cook. Today we're talking about caricaturing culture in India, cartoons and history in the modern world by Ritu Gairola Kandori. Ritu is Associate Professor of Anthropology at the University of Texas at Arlington and the book is published by Cambridge. The book is a really wonderful piece of visual anthropology which uses the history of cartoons from colonial to current times to talk about various aspects of Indian society from the state to political society through to modernity. Really was a wonderful book to read and I really learned a lot. I had the pleasure of talking with Ritu just a few minutes before. Okay, so without any further ado, it gives me great pleasure to welcome Ritu to the show. Thanks a lot for coming on and thanks a lot for your wonderful book.
Thank you, Ian. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Wonderful. So before we talk about the book itself, I was wondering, could you first please tell me a little bit about your background and your academic and research interests prior to this book?
I like to call myself an anthropologist, an accidental anthropologist, because for a good number of years and a good number of degrees are in history, particularly modern Indian history. And I switched over disciplinary allegiances to anthropology after coming to Texas, University of Texas at Austin. And very broadly, my interest hover around media and in particularly the print media. So I have been working on bazaar prints and newspaper cartoons for a very long time, first in my avatar as a historian at the Jawaharlal Nehru University in New Delhi, and then in the anthropology program at UT Austin. So this has been a continuous streak in my work. And cartoons came to the forefront more prominently as I began to look and more deeply into contestations over meanings. That was my primary interest in how visual texts are contested in the public space. And cartoons seem to jump out more prominently than other images. So my book is a result of that interest that developed over the years in cartoons.
Wonderful, thank you. So now let's turn to the book itself. So before we talk about the chapters in detail, I think it's worth saying for those unfamiliar with the Indian context that newspapers, mm-hmm. which is where most of these cartoons appear, they have a wide and growing circulation in India, both mm-hmm. in the national language and, of course, in lots of local languages as well. But it wasn't just their wide circulation that interested you in cartoons. So I was wondering, can you tell us what drew you now as an anthropologist? We've now mm-hmm. switched allegiances to the study of cartoons. And what were you hoping to find out and how did you go about finding it?
Well, the first thing that intrigued me about these newspaper cartoons after I came across certain reports in the colonial archive was that there's a lot of discussion going on about the meaning of cartoons, whether there are certain hidden meanings or what may be the exact meaning. So there is an attempt, a serious attempt to settle the interpretation of the cartoons, but it is all being done at the official level. And so there's a a guessing game going on about this text and what secrets it holds, if you will. So I wanted to go beyond the text, not to say that the cartoons themselves were not significant enough to merit attention. They are. But I was interested in what is being said about these cartoons. Can we in some ways get to the people who are being addressed and who are reading these cartoons? So it's difficult really to track the exact constituency that the cartoon taps. So there is a intuitive public, if you will, that is being addressed here. So I got interested in locating spaces where this talk, and I use the word, I use the phrase cartoon talk, is being recorded. It's inscribed in public space. And so I looked at guest books that I found in different cartoon exhibitions and in other archives. I talked to cartoonists themselves to understand what it is they think or they want their cartoons to do, and to some activists who have scrutinized cartoons as part of a larger collection of texts and announcements, etc. So they're not particularly interested in cartoons, but cartoons was one important public texts that they were interested in sort of scrutinizing and in some ways monitoring also for any kind of misrepresentation. So through all these different ways, I wanted to sort of complement the cartoon with what is being said about the cartoon, that is cartoon talk. What that meant was that cartoon talk became sort of the trace through which a history of cartoons could be written. So rather than selecting a sort of a framework of shifting styles of cartoons or necessarily generating a list of prominent cartoonists, rather than those modes of writing a history of cartoons, I tracked it through cartoon talk.
Thank you. And as well as this idea of cartoon talk, also in the introduction, you advanced this, I think it's a really interesting idea of what you call tactical modernity. So I don't mean, what is this concept and how does this help us understand cartoons in India?
As an anthropologist, and I was suppose historians too, modernity is something that has been discussed, and particularly this idea that you can have multiple modernities, and which sort of means that if you want to understand modernity, we don't necessarily have to look at its European conceptualization, but also how it gets worked and reworked within different contexts. Now, while this multiple modernities is sort of a useful way of trying to listen to different articulations of what it means to be a modern, what is a modern experience, I felt that we could go beyond this by seeing modernity or the articulation of modernity. How do we express something as modern? How do we claim something as modern? To see that more as a disposition. And so this term tactical modernity is also inspired from Deschateau's work, where I have used it to signal that in relation to cartoons, people, because cartoons are not an institutionalized form which requires critics to mediate its true meanings, people take on the role of critics as the true interpreters of this form. This is what is important about this form, in my observation. And so the interpretation of cartoons, when it sort of comes into their radar as being an important moment in which something can be said about Indian democracy or the way secularism is being played out or liberal politics is being laid out, people can snatch these moments as productive moments. So it's not as if there's a long-term strategy about how do we voice our perspective on modernity, but it is about how these opportunities sort of become available, but more than that, how these are taken advantage of, how they are grabbed. So it was with that idea that I used this term tactical modernity. It sort of allows us to look at the politics of when we want to claim modernity and how we want to claim modernity, rather than just settling for a definition and allowing the definition to sort of make decisions about whether we are modern or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it works really well in throughout the chapters. Now, this book has a lot of very rich chapters, and we're not going to get the time, unfortunately, to talk about all of them today. So rather, I want to talk about one or two of the chapters from each of the three sections. So there's three sections ordered historically. There's colonial times, national times, and global times. Mm-hmm. So with this in mind, my first question is actually about two chapters together, chapter two and three, because I think they quite nicely roll into one another. So chapter two is about Gandhi and cartoons, and chapter three is about the cartoonist Shankar, and who Gandhi actually approved of. So I was wondering, can you first tell us a little bit about Gandhi and his relation to cartoons, and then a little bit about Shankar, at whom he was upset?
Yes, certainly. Most people in India that you'd meet, and maybe many abroad too, would have visited the Gandhi Museum or some of the memorials dedicated to Gandhi. And at least the one in New Delhi, which is the Gandhi Smriti, as well as the National Gandhi Museum, also in New Delhi, has cartoons. And So we are sort of familiar, the public is familiar that there were many cartoons made on Gandhi. In fact, perhaps he was very popular among cartoonists for the way that they could play and caricature his sartorial preferences and also his sort of symbolic politics that he engaged in. So he was a very rich candidate for caricature globally. Having said that, few people noticed, and to me also it came as a very interesting sort of discovery, that Gandhi was very interested in cartoons while he was in South Africa and editing the Indian Opinion. And there he went into great lengths to explain to his readers and maybe even to those who were not reading his newspapers, but perhaps listening to his newspapers, because he was interested in addressing the indentured laborers too, who were not necessarily literate. He was very keen on disclosing the politics of these cartoons, that, you know, these are important components of the newspaper and should not be dismissed by the immigrant Indian population there, and that there is a way in which we could understand the minds of the whites, the mind of the whites, that is what really they were thinking if one gave close attention to what's going on in these cartoons. So that was one track that he was attempting in writing about these cartoons in the Indian Opinion. The second track that he was taking was to sort of show to the readers and the immigrant Indian immigrant population there that the whites were not necessarily divided, were not necessarily united in their opposition or in their discrimination or racism against the Indians. In fact, if one saw the politics being displayed in the cartoonists were sympathetic to the position of the Indian immigrants there and to the very to their exploitation in South Africa. So he wanted to sort of demystify any kind of a white solidarity, if you will. So I think these two things came as very interesting sort of observations for me when I began to look at the archives, particularly Gandhi's writings in more than 100 volumes where his writings have been collected. So and in the Indian Opinion, where all these pieces were written. So this was about chapter two, yes.
Yes. and then in chapter three, you're talking a little bit about Shankar, this, I suppose, like the godfather of cartooning in India. And then he was someone that Gandhi specifically didn't really like the sort of things he was drawing.
Yes. There is archival evidence of how he sort of rebuked Shankar for being careless and not being factual in his depiction of Jinnah. And this is a different kind of avatar of Gandhi in terms of his relationship to cartoons. So in South Africa, we see him as championing the interpretation of cartoons. And here, when he's well into, you know, the leadership role of the nationalist movement, colonial India is at the brink of independence, if you will, and he wants to sort of, he's playing this role of negotiating the meaning of cartoons, because we have to be sort of sensitive to the portrayal of certain communities. So he sort of wants to instill this responsibility, the sensitivity. But how, say, for example, Muslims are going to be portrayed and caricatured in cartoons. And Jinnah becomes this sort of standby for the Muslim community or the Muslim League, if you will. And so Gandhi is sensitive to these kinds of portrayals. And here he begins to take on a kind of a pedagogical role, but of a different kind, where he's disciplining the cartoonist. He's disciplining Shankar. So with these two chapters, I wanted to show Gandhi's engagement with cartoons in completely different roles. One where he's engaging the reader, and second where he's engaging the cartoonist, and sort of setting the norms for an ethics of cartooning, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So now let's then talk a little bit about this National Times section of the book. There's a couple of nice chapters, one on learning and another on whether or not cartooning is an art form. But we're not going to ask you about them. Rather, I'm going to ask you about this emergence of the common man and the common woman characters, these sort of enduring characters that you describe wonderfully. So I was wondering, first, can you tell us what or maybe who they are? How did they come about and why have they been so enduring in India?
Let me see where I can begin with how they came about. Usually, the common man this character, common man, is generic for the common person, is associated with R.K. Lakshman. And it is true that R.K. Lakshman's common man, which appeared in a very specific cartoon format that we call the pocket cartoon, it has endured public fascination for a long time. And R.K. Lakshman passed away earlier this year. So there was this recollection of the significance of the common man in Indian cartooning that followed obituaries after he passed away and other pieces of writing on Lakshman. But in the process, I think we give little credit to the person who preceded Lakshman and actually introduced the common man in this pocket cartoon format, and that is Samuel, who was a cartoonist in the Times of India and who worked very closely with the editor of the Times of India at the time, Dr. Mankekar. And I interviewed him too while I was researching for this book, and I've written about him in this chapter. So the common man was a sort of voice of the public, the public that witnesses the bureaucracy at work, the public that experiences democracy. And so there was a way in which this character is able to sort of depict the public consciousness of what is going on. But of course, it is the cartoonist who is conveying this perspective, this public perspective. Now, it so happened that historically, this common man character has been presented in a particular gender way. It's sort of a male. So Samuel's common man was Babuji, a clerk, and R.K. Lakshman's was also a clerk. He's seen around, working files, etc., in the office, but he's a peon, kind of a clerk, if you will. And then we have in more recent times, Meeta Roy's common woman, and she has experimented with a couple of incarnations of the common woman. But by and large, they are male figures, a masculine, not masculine public, but a male public, if you will. So this is sort of in a nutshell about what the role of this character is, and not everyone has assigned the same role to this common man. The reason that it has been very popular in India is that this common man character, the way he was visualized, became the signature for the cartoonist, so that you could see the common man character and then recognize the cartoon as being made by X, Y, and Z. And it is also integral to the format that became very popular, which is a 1x1-inch cartoon called the pocket cartoon. So most newspapers in India have a pocket cartoon, even though the big editorial cartoons no more grace all the all the newspapers. They at one time they used to be prominent, but now very few cartoons newspapers include the big editorial cartoons. So I would say the pocket cartoon format and the fact that the character became a signature of the cartoonist unleashed in the words of another cartoonist an epidemic of pocket cartoons and common man characters.
Wonderful. It really is a fascinating discussion that you have in the chapter. So in the last section of the book, it's about the Global Times, as you call it. It's really nice that I was reading this where, of course, and you wrote it. You wrote it before, but I was reading it afterwards, that the recent controversy that's about cartoons, which seems as a ever topical discussion about cartoons' abilities to provoke angry reactions from people. And what was really interesting in India, which which, as you discussed, has a long tradition of not only visually representing Indian gods, but of also using these deities to mock politicians. This was one of the few countries that banned the reproduction of the Danish cartoons that caused all these troubles back in 2005. So I was wondering, first, could you talk us through how and why comics offend and don't offend in the Indian context, and then what people do when they are offended?
Oh, that's a big question. Let me see if I can do justice to that. So I'm going to try responding to that. So the first one is, could you repeat the first question?
Yes, sure.
Again?
So I was just wondering, so how and why comics offend or don't offend in India? Like, what is it that offends certain groups or doesn't offend certain groups?
Okay. Well, it's hard to sort of give a sort of precise response to that. And it sort of takes me back to your first question about what is tactical modernity. So it's about when we want to sort of analyze offense, we have to situate it within the political context, the conditions under which that sensibility of offense is being spoken about. In the book, I have described specific examples which sort of point to a number of contexts within which offense could be taken in cartoons. Again, these are about the politics of saying and visuality. So, for example, we have a sociologist, Professor Kanabiran, who took up a case of a cartoon in the Asian Age where there was a derogatory representation or a derogatory way in which women were being talked about, particularly Sangeeta Bijlani. So the cartoon itself did not include any caricature of a woman. It was a dialogue between two people, and in which the two cricket players, prominent Indian cricket players, are talking about this actress, Sangeeta Bijlani. So that cartoon became a sort of context for talking about objectification of women and how offense needs to be taken for such senses of humor where women can be laughed off, you know, politically incorrect. So that is one. So this is, again, you know, how cartoons become that moment for speaking out and speaking about the objectification of women. Now, having said that, we know that there are other platforms for making these kind of claims. But so the question really is, what is it that makes it significant to make these kinds of demands and claims about objectification in relation to the cartoon? What more work does the cartoon do, when we take up these cases through what is being represented or what is being caricatured? The other example that I gave was from my conversations with R.L. Kane, who monitors cartoons with the help of other associates represent members of Dalit communities in poor light. And here again, there's this politics of how do you represent minorities? How do you represent Dalits? And he takes this on as a part of his larger politics and his larger activities where he champions Dalit causes and sees himself as a representation, as a representative of the Dalit community. So again, with just these two examples, we can see that cartoons become this sort of way for constituting publics, I would argue, that through cartoons, because of their reach, there is a possibility of taking on these issues that can be taken up in other platforms too. But through cartoons, they allow for a public to be constituted. So that is why I think these become significant. And in a direct response to your question, what is it that can be taken offense to? I would say the field is open. It can, you know, it can be a question of gender representations. It can be about how caste is represented, and it can also be about, one newspaper petitioning another newspaper for defaming it in the way that it was being represented. And I show that with the Humpty Dumpty cartoon that is there in the book. So I think that nothing is out of bounds. We tend to very quickly associate this hurt or offense with religious figures, But I want to show is that, you know, it is the sense of hurt and offense also takes place outside of this sphere of religion.
Thank you. In the conclusion, which is you ponder whether or not cartoons have a future in what you call this hyper global era. So I suppose this is a good question on which to finish our discussion about the book. I was wondering, you know, do you think cartoons have a future, or what's the future of cartoons?
I think it's very clear that there is a future for cartoons. And precisely because they have become sites for politics that we can grab, hold on to, we can grab. And just to give you three examples from different contexts, in India, around 2011 and 12, there were two prominent cases where a professor in Jadavpur University was arrested for a day for circulating via Facebook cartoons of the Chief Minister Mamata Banerjee of the Trinamool Congress. And his offense was defaming Mamata Banerjee, the politician. The other case that I want to sort of reference briefly is of Asim Trivedi, who sort of drew a series of cartoons against corruption, and he was charged charged for sedition and for misrepresenting national symbols. And the complaint against him was that he had hurt the sentiment of the nation. We would think that people have sentiments, but here this is very interesting representation of how the sentiments of the nation had been hurt. And the third example that I want to give, again in relation to India, but in a completely different context, is how the New York Times cartoonist made a cartoon when India sent a robot in space to Mars, and he made a cartoon where there are these Western elites, sitting in a club, and an Indian farmer, person looking like a farmer with a cow tethered, is knocking at the door as if seeking admission to that very exclusive club. And New York Times issued an apology after it received several letters condemning that ad for showing India in poor light. So we can see, just within the context of India or anything related to India, how there is a proliferation of this sense of misrepresentation, defamation, sedition, which is being claimed not necessarily by the public only, but also by the state, say by Mamata Banerjee or by others who are representing the state or speaking on behalf of the state. Now, beyond that, we know recently with the Charlie Hebdo shooting in Paris, again, cartoons came to the fore in a very powerful way about what is a freedom of speech, and is it a human right or is it a universal right, and is there a freedom of expression that can be enjoyed by everyone? So I see this issue, particularly cartoons, gaining more currency for debating these very important aspects about expression and freedom.
Thank you. We've really rushed through what is a very, very rich book and spans a very long period. So I was wondering if there's anything that I've missed out with my questions that you'd like to highlight in the book for the listeners at home.
Well, I think you've asked great questions. And one thing that I would highlight is that a good part of this book is also about conversations with cartoonists. And without them as individuals, as people that I conversed with, it would have been very difficult to conceptualize this project. And their voices as part and parcel of the story, how it unravels, is quite crucial. I hope that that this book also disturbs some presumptions or some comfort levels we have with what is history and what is anthropology, and that it also is able to highlight how we can turn to cartoonists and to the form of the cartoon itself to think about this desire that we have and this sort of constant ambition, I would say, we have to represent accurately, if you will. You know, so we sort of work very hard in trying to prove how our representation is accurate, whether that is ethnographic representation or historical representation. And what cartoonists show us, that caricature does a great job of representation. And I hope that sort of will generate some conversation.
I hope so too. Yeah, I mean, these discussions, like you were mentioning before, with the cartoonists are really nice. I think is his name Kuti or Kutter? What's his name?
Kuti.
Yes, you seem to have a very strong relationship with him. He's a wonderful, wonderfully eloquent informant to have when you're in the field. I think they're really wonderful conversations to read. There's another reason to recommend this book to people at home. So I was wondering, now that this book is out, I was wondering, what are your current and future projects?
Well, there are some directions that I wasn't able to completely integrate in this book, and it was hard to stop because new events kept emerging. So there are areas that I would like to develop, particularly in relation to Asim Trivedi's work and some of the recent controversies around cartoons. And I'm also interested in comic books. So that is another area that I'm currently exploring, including a sort of a slightly new area that I've called Gandhi Emotion, where I'm trying to understand the public, sort of a global fascination with Gandhi through material culture. So those are some of the things that are keeping me busy now.
Mm-hmm. And these are comic books, these graphic novels that are coming out now by Indian drawers, what would they call, chitra type comics of what sort of comic books are you looking at?
Well, what I've seen is that in recent years, there is a kind of a cottage industry of comic books. And there are people, small groups of young sort of people who are the youth, who are sort of generating very interesting comic books. And I've sort of begun to look at their work closely. And we have these comic book conventions in India now that are catching up. So I'm intrigued by how this has come up and what kind of participation it is able to entice. And Amar Chitra Kathas were very popular. They continue to be very popular. And I think from a historical perspective too. But there's a lot that has gone that has sort of developed beyond Amar Chitra Kathas. So I'm interested in that. And one of the most recent comic books that I'm sort of looking at is the one that was made on the rape in Delhi, Priya Shakti. So there are sort of other genres of comic books that do circulate in India. So that's sort of what I'm keen about.
It sounds fascinating. I'm asking very much as a fan of comic books. That's why I was interested. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we should be in touch then.
Yes.
About comic books, yes.
Wonderful. And we look forward to reading more of your work in the future when it comes out. So there's nothing more for me to do apart from to recommend this book to people at home. I really enjoyed it. As you can imagine, there's lots of wonderful cartoons inside it as well that people will enjoy reading alongside the text. So thanks a lot for coming on the show, and thanks again for your book.
Thank you, Ian. It was wonderful to chat with you. Thank you for your questions.
Thanks so much for downloading the New Books in South Asian Studies podcast. I've been your host, Ian Cook. Today we've been talking about caricaturing culture in India by Ritu Gairola Kandori. This book is absolutely wonderful, so rich in its material and so exciting in the way this material is explored. Thanks again for downloading, and hopefully you do the same next time. Ta-ra!